This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey, Rugby Rant fans, it's the big guy, Scott Ferrara, and we have another RPK episode. And this RPK is going to be a little bit unique. I mean, we're going to do a traditional style of interview, but we're kind of talking and going into a segment of rugby that we generally don't go into. We're trying to kind of broaden our horizon to bring some awareness to the club rugby scene. So let me introduce to you guys Wes Overson, Weston Overson. He's the president of the Southwest Rugby Union. Wes, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And it's funny. So the way I got in contact with Wes and his partners there that are running the regional playoffs for the club teams this year, I saw an advertisement on Facebook for an adjacent tournament of tens. So, you know, you go, you know, as we know, we've all played club rugby, and especially for me, who's played, you know, Division IV club rugby, you go to those, you make the regional and then you get knocked out and you're one and done. And now you have the rest of the weekend to sit there and watch everybody else hoist trophies. So one of the things that they decided to do in this regional was add a tens tournament, men's and women's, so that way those teams can still participate in rugby on, you know, later in the day in the next couple of days, and really make a weekend event of it. And honestly, Wes, I think it's a good idea. So I reached out because tens is one of those things that it's a, you know, a code not everybody knows about. It's a code that honestly I felt got the most use in COVID when the Bermuda tens came out. Right. Being shown on YouTube and Facebook for free when nothing else was going on. So got a lot of eyes on it. But, you know, again, you know, it's one of those things we're trying to talk about a little bit of club rugby, and being, you know, president of a union is a big deal. And it's one of those things where, you know, you're overseeing a lot of stuff, and it was, just thought it was the time to reach out and try and get it. So my first question is, Wes, if you could just give us a rundown how on you and how rugby came into your life.
Yeah, so I've been president of Southwest Rugby for the last 4 years, 5 years, something like that. Before that, I coached Prescott Black Sheep. I coached a high school side, an all-star program. Rugby for me really started when I was about 8 years old. My parents were missionaries, and I ended up growing up in South Africa, which, as you all know, four-time world champs, but we don't have to get into all of that. But that's where I played all my schoolboy rugby from ages 8 to about 16. I played for Selborne College for Rondebosch, both top-notch schools for rugby in South Africa, and then moved to the States, played for Haverford Knights, was my first team in the States, played for EPRU All-Stars, bounced around, joined the military, and found myself getting out of the military in Arizona, and Since then, I've just kind of been committed to the game out here and seeing it grow.
That's awesome. You know, that's outside of like the normal, what we would call American experience. Most people experience it in college after they played, right, you know, whatever, you know, high school athletics they played. Unfortunately, they didn't have an opportunity to play in college and you kind of fall into rugby. But that's great. I mean, especially being able to do it at the schoolboy level and really, you know, learn it at a basic level and do it throughout your life. What branch of the military were you in?
I was in the Army. I did 8 years.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah, I know our buddy Doc Irie down in NOLA, active corpsman in the Marines and playing nice professional rugby. Yeah, he's a badass. So always love asking guys what branch of the military they were in. But yeah, I think you have a unique story and insight into rugby and then playing it, you know, coming here and playing it. And,
right.
You know, that's really interesting. So as the president of the Southwest Rugby Union, can you give us an update on how the club sides are doing in that region? And is there an uptick in guys sipping and women sipping to get on teams? Like, how's it looking over there?
Yeah, I mean, and I would say we were one of the few unions that kind of kept going through COVID. I know a lot of them had to put stops on practices or play just, you know, because of state health standards and that sort of thing. We kept going. We were able to implement a way to play and stay safe at the same time and keep everyone safe. And so we didn't really see a dip in numbers. You know, I think now we're not quite where we were last year, but of course, once seven starts up, we'll start to see an uptick again. And that'll bring us about up to where we were last year as far as sipped players goes. Competitive, you know, our women are strong. We were able to bring a lot of our women's teams back from SoCal to play out of the Southwest, all except for Tempe women's. They just have better competition in SoCal than they would here. But Vegas, Atomic Sisters, you know, Phoenix, OP, they're all playing solid rugby. On the men's side of things, you know, we don't have any D1 rugby here. We're a D2, D3 union. But we have, I want to say when I took over, we really only had about two D2 sides. And I want to say we have about five fairly competitive D2 sides now. So that shows, you know, that there's some competitiveness and some growth happening, which is always great. D3, you know, the guys are battling it out. My club took a beating this year, but it's a rebuilding year for us. And yeah. Rugby here is, you know, it's pretty golden. They're putting in the work.
That's awesome. You know, that's as far as women are concerned, I think that's the South is an underutilized area for maybe getting a good D1 team into like the WPL at some point and representing. Because really, I think all the teams are literally above the Mason-Dixon line right now in the WPL. That's interesting because especially in the Southwest, you guys do have a large population in that area you described of women playing. And again, it's one of those things you have to also be up to the caliber of play, and you will eventually get there, right? I mean, it's right. It's not like, you know, I'll use Old Blue and NIAC for an example. You know, they have been around so long that they've got to a certain level to maintain what they've been doing. You know, newer teams, newer club teams, you have to get to that level, and having, you know, great D2 teams eventually gives you a breakout into great D1 teams, and iron sharpens iron that way. So I think, you know, especially on the women's side, it's great to see that you have that many women's teams playing in the union. And hopefully, like I said, I think that's a prime area to get a new WPL team, in my opinion. But, you know, yeah. What do I know?
we brought back our select side 2 years ago now. We'd always had men's select sides, and so they've always done well. We'd never really had a women's select side, and so these last 2-3 years have been the first time for us having women's selects. And, man, they went to, is it Mary Graham or Graham, the women's select side tournament in Texas. They went there and they rocked it. Nice. Surprised a lot of people that weren't expecting it. And out of that, we got an ID camp pathway from USA Rugby coming to the Southwest for the first time. They absolutely rocked it. So that was great to see.
That's awesome. Again, you know, it's not just about growing a specific segment, about growing all segments. So glad to see it. So let's talk about the regional tournament again. So I kind of gave away what the idea was behind adding that tens tournament, but if you could just go through a little bit about that, adding that tens tournament to the regional playoffs.
Yeah, so historically, when you had when it came to playoffs, especially here in the Southwest, you know, if you won here in New Mexico, then you went to SoCal and you played the best of SoCal, which cost money. And then from there, we would go to Texas, play what would be the Elite Eight. That cost more money. And then from there, you went to Nationals. And that just, it was an astronomical cost if you made it all the way to Nationals. And so what we decided to do, the Southwest, SoCal, Pacific Northwest, and NorCal, we decided to host our playoffs, our regionals every year in Las Vegas. The flights are cheap, tons of hotels, hotels are cheap. So we're just booking the fields a year in advance. And we're going to host it there as long as, you know, everybody's in agreement, we'll continue to host it in Las Vegas. So that was in effect to save money. You know, if you stand a good chance of going to regionals, you can book it in January, even December the year before, because the dates will be out and you know where the field is. And then we were thinking, how do we, you know, let's say you book it early and, you get bumped out in playoffs. And now you're no longer traveling to Vegas. You know, some things are refundable, some things are not. And so we said, why don't we host a tournament alongside of it? We got the field space. You know, we'll have a lot of local referees coming in to support it. But we'll host a tournament this way. You know, you book it in January. Let's say you get beat out in playoffs. Well, you can still come play and play a tennis tournament, you know, make it a social day. It gets a lot of eyes on the regionals, which I think is a great thing. You know, you play your social match, you come over and watch a regionals match. Some of these teams could be going to nationals. You never know. So this is a chance to see them in action, which I think is great. Saves money, brings a lot of the clubs together and builds a culture. So that's kind of the idea behind the whole thing.
That's awesome. You know, again, I think adding some bang to their buck to, make a weekend out of it and not just be a one and done. I've been on one and done sides and haven't been able to do anything else.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to spend money, you know, I might as well lose it by participating in another tournament than throwing it at the craps table in Vegas, to be quite honest. So it's good to see. So let's talk just a little bit about tens and, you know, we talked about 2020. I think, you know, most North American rugby fans were watching the Bermuda tens on YouTube. I had quite a few friends playing for all those teams. And they had different law variations. They had rolling subs. They had different conversion point values. What kind of law structure are you using for this tens tournament? Are we going to have any type of that fun stuff, or are we just strictly regular code there?
I plan. You should, to be completely fair, you know, it's a committee, so I don't make all the choices. but you know, I would like it to see it be as social as possible. You know, you traveled all this way. You know, if you're good for about 2.5 minutes, you need to come out and for a minute and go back in. I want to see, you know, rolling subs. I want to see both the men's and women's just having a good time and getting their players out there to experience it. So I'd like to see rolling subs. You know, I think we decided it was going to be 40-minute halves with a 5-minute halftime. It gives us about 10-15 minutes to clear the field between matches. But yeah, I think the committee has a meeting this week and we'll decide, you know, the final rulings and tournament style. But my hope is that it stays completely social.
Yep. No, I like that. Listen, again, you want to have people having as much fun possible. And I'm sure the heat down there is going to suck. I mean, It's 55 degrees here in New York and I'm already sweating my ass off. So I can only imagine going down there and playing rugby. So the next question is, do you think tens is a code that could grow rugby in the U.S. overall?
I think I'm on two minds here. Can I kick this one?
Sure. No. You can kick it. You can,
No.
You can definitely kick it.
No, I think I'm of two minds here. You know, tens is more of a social tournament aspect. You know, we have a tens tournament here in Arizona, Flagstaff Tens. They've done it every year for the last 40-some-odd years. Almost every team in Arizona, New Mexico, they show up. And it's the beginning of preseason, you know, so it's a lot of guys' first time ever touching a rugby ball. You know, we take all our rookies up there and let them cut their teeth in a tens tournament that's a little more social. Now, we take it pretty competitively, but, you know, at the end of the day, it is, to me, more on the social side than 15s or 7s. I do think it could help grow the sport. Like I said, you know, a lot of prime time, September, October, when we're starting practice up, we're getting, you know, 10, 15 new guys to each practice. To take them to something like that where it's social and everybody's getting along and the season isn't on the line, it usually gets them to see the culture of rugby and kind of buy into it at that point. So I think it does have its place in that, you know, these kinds of tournaments create a culture that people want to be a part of.
Absolutely. You know, I think you're right. And I think even nowadays in 15, sometimes those B-side matches get super competitive. And for us, the B-side match was always more of a social learning aspect. And if you had a good official, you know, we had a great official up in Nerfview, you know, so the B-side match, you know, he'd be in there teaching guys. You know, he'd blow a play dead and be like, that was dangerous. I'm not going to card you because nobody was hurt, but this is the way you need to go about it. And taught guys how to play safe and how to play by the law. And I think you have so many people who want to be on a team that they're obviously not going to be on the A-side all the time. They get a little too competitive with the B-side social match. So maybe it's one of those things where you just say, hey, instead of a B-side match, we're going to play a 10 social matches, the B-side, you know, instead of a full 15s and have a little more fun with it. And then if you have enough guys, maybe you split up into four teams, you know, and have a little round robin tournament yourself. But I think you're right. I think you take that and make it a social aspect and introduce it to people who are a little wary about rugby and aren't educated about it.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
So speaking of education, one of the biggest initiatives that I think all rugby fans in the U.S. has is the expansion of youth rugby. Do you think 10s offers a better way to introduce the sport to children than maybe 15s or 7s does?
Again, you know, rugby being part of my my youth, having played since I was 7 or 8, I'm a 15s player. I have kind of the uncommon view that 7s and 15s are kind of separate games. You know, where I grew up, you didn't play sevens. You played, if you were a 15s player, that's what you did. You know, you're starting to see some cross pollination now, which I think is great for the sport. And, it gets people excited either way, 15s or sevens. So I said all that to say this, you know, here in America, having seen the landscape of rugby here and now my two kids are 11 and 8. They just started playing this year. But the problem is they don't have enough players. And so they go down and they'll practice with me and the men's team up here. And then we go down to Phoenix to play our rugby. And we have to join teams with some kids that we've never met before, never practiced together before. And they kind of, you know, they enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. They had a blast, but they kind of got stomped because some of these other players or teams that do have players, they practice together 2 times a week and just kind of ran over us. So I think if, you know, these smaller codes, 7s, 10s, you know, if you don't have enough for a 15 side, and many don't, especially at the youth level, I think that's a good look. And I think more people should be willing to accept a 10s match in place of a 15s match just to keep the game going.
Absolutely. I think you're right. And again, you know, I coach youth football and we start out our under eights and some under 10 teams start out with 8 kids on the field. And it's very instructional and it's easier to manage 8 kids per team with 4 coaches on each team to teach them how to do things safely and right. So again, I think on the youth side, to have less players on the field to manage for an official and a referee, and you know, kids, they're going to chase the ball and it's like herding ferrets. So having 15 a side is kind of tough, I believe, at those ages. So, you know, I think you're right. I think you can introduce it a little bit easier with a little less players on the field. But while I think sevens is too little of a players on too big of a pitch for some of these youth teams.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. You can always cut the pitches in half and stuff like that. But, you know, I think it's a little too broad for them as far as open field. So the last tens question I'm really going to ask, and not that you're a tens expert, but it kind of just spurred some idea. And I'd like to hear from you and being involved in the club side, you know, so much in coaching and your experience, you know, I just thought having this conversation about it would be nice with somebody from the other side of the country, to be quite honest. will be good. So, you know, Rhino Rugby has had a team in the R10s championship in South Africa for like 3 or 4 years now. Their team has included players like Mike Teo, my buddy Watson, Philly Kitango, you know, Iona College guy, go Gales, and Sam Malolo. So do you think if they had more MLL crossover, they would have a little bit more popularity maybe in the States? You know, maybe you could take some of those teams and say, like, you know, San Diego, if Mikey Teo's over there and he's contracted with San Diego, San Diego should be having a watch party. Like, do you think it could gain popularity if there's more crossover?
Are you asking if I think 10s could gain more popularity?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I do think so. You know, look, anytime people that we know or players from college or players from the MLR or even the Eagles side, anytime they're playing any other aspect of rugby, you know, we should be supporting that. And I do think that, again, 10s was not a thing for me coming from South Africa. I never heard of that before I landed here. But the landscape being that what it is, anything that we can do to grow American rugby, get more people involved, if that's, you know, watch parties. I know we just had a watch party here for the World Cup in Prescott. Mm-hmm. People came out of the woodworks that we never even would have known supported rugby in any capacity, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of takes all of us, all facets of the sport, 7s, 10s, 15s, working together to grow this thing. But I think it can.
Yeah, and like I said, it's as much rugby as we can consume as possible, and we can make it free on YouTube and other platforms, I think is the best way to grow the sport here in America, besides youth programs, you know? So that's it for the 10. So I got a couple more questions. You know, one of the things that we've talked about here at the Rugby Rant, I think I've kind of championed this idea, to be quite honest, so I'm going to toot my own horn a little bit, is the idea that local players who may not be able to play and who just want to participate in a program where they give money directly to youth programs. And that would be, while it would be a USA Rugby initiative, it would be administered by the regional unions, right? And the way we came up with that is, you know, I played, you know, rugby, I played hockey, I got hurt my neck, decided, okay, I can't really be playing, you know, collision sports anymore like hockey and rugby. But I do want to give back to youth, you know, and I don't have enough money to start my own youth program. But we already kind of have these unions set up in place and we have a national organization. So the thought was, let's have, like, you know, the Junior Eagle program, where a senior level club player who may not be able to sip and pay dues to their team because they can't play kind of has their own type of, you know, $30 a year. And you know that $30 a year is going to go to your local union. You know, you say, I live in New York, it'll go into Empire Union. I live in Nevada, it'll go to the Southwest Union. And then your union would administer that to the local youth programs to either create a program or get it in schools, things like that. Do you think that would be an initiative that your members, you know, would either, one, you know, bring to their friends, or do you think you have members that aren't playing right now that would support an initiative?
Yeah, I do think, that's a great idea. You know, part of every issue part of the main issue for every sport is it takes money to do this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we have dues, you have club dues, SIP fees. It's honestly, rugby is one of the cheaper sports, mm-hmm. club sports out there yearly. However, it's still not cheap. And I found that out when I shipped both my kids this year for, you know, nine weeks of rugby. I was like, who comes up with these prices? Me, I do. so I, you know, there are tons of ways to give back. You know, what a lot of people don't know is that USA Rugby and senior club rugby are not the same animal. USA Rugby is the overall entity. Then you have the Senior Club Council, which is made up of volunteers. They handle DEI. They handle, you know, disciplinary issues. Mm-hmm. They handle SIP issues, and they're a group base of volunteers that work their tails off to mm-hmm. give senior club rugby a 15s and a 7s pathway to nationals. Outside of that, we really wouldn't have that sort of thing. So, you know, I didn't really notice that until I got in my position and I was able to sit on the senior club council and see, you know, the meetings that go on and the work, you know, behind that nobody's getting paid for. You know, but they're tirelessly giving of their time to help grow the sport. So there are numerous ways if you can't be involved in the sport itself, which, you know, I'm 36, I've probably taken my hits for my lifetime. I'm you know, ready to hang up the boots, but I don't plan on stopping. You know, we have the Bobcats Academy here in Arizona. They travel, they take youth and high school teams all around the country. Nice. You know, I give to them, I coach them when I can. You know, we're, as you know, being involved in the club rugby landscape, there's always golf tournaments or,
oh yeah,
you know, poker tournaments or, you know, whatever's happening.
Fundraisers, yeah.
Exactly. There's always something. And, you know, even if it's 10, 20 bucks, it goes a long way for the sport that we all love.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, the initiative, that was one of the other things, is because there's not real connection there, right, at the top levels, was that was, that would be a way to connect, because you say rugby is always saying we want to help youth rugby. The people who can help youth rugby the most, let's be honest, are the people who are playing on senior club teams, right? They're usually people who have a job and have a family, and they can throw a little bit of extra money towards a youth program. So that's also a reason, was kind of bridge that gap of like,
yeah,
those two organizations at a higher level to say, what, this is the common goal. You know, what can we do with it? Because again, as we know, USA Rugby, while it's a big organization, doesn't have that many people working for it to try and administer youth programs in 50 odd states, right? Or 48 contiguous states. So that's why the thought was, well, branch it out to the unions, in my opinion, for you guys to administer, because you would know the landscape better than, you know, somebody staying in Glendale, Colorado. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not a knock on them, but, you know, you guys are just into it the most. So I got two more questions for you. This one is an interesting question. I'm not trying to air out anybody, any club's dirty laundry or anything like that, but like, what do you think the biggest gap that you see from your level between individual clubs and your union? Like, is it finances? Is it rugby knowledge? Is it lack of facilities? Like, where do you see, you know, those big gaps? And it could be in divisions, individual teams, you know, is it, you know, not having enough players in a specific area?
That's a good question. I know my club personally, we live in a small town. I'd say there's, you know, 120,000 people. We have a college here. It's a small college, but we draw 60 to 70% of our players from that college. And so 2-3 years in, when they're just getting to become very competent players, they're graduating and moving on. Yeah. And so for us, it's a constant struggle to keep people, you know, so we open it up to locals. And that kind of boosted our competitiveness, because we now had guys that were coming back for 7, 8, 9 years, you know. I would say overall, in my opinion, the level of coaching is probably something that hinders a lot of clubs. Most people become leaders in their clubs or coaches kind of out of necessity. There's nobody else to do it. They have two or 3 years experience. And so they're kind of plugging a gap, if you will. And so I've often thought that, you know, if we could, and so just, you know, kind of putting words into practice, when I brought the select side back into the Southwest, I said, I really wanted to be a pathway to play better competitive rugby for the players. But if it's not a pathway for coaches to learn and coach at a higher level, then I don't want to do it at all. Because the only way we get better here is if the players gain more experience and the coaching is more direct and more educated, in my opinion. So that would probably be my answer, is the level of coaching. And that's not to say anything against coaches. They're doing their absolute best.
No, but I mean, I think you see it across the country, and you see that we have to import coaches for MLR teams, you know, to stay competitively, you know, have that competitive edge. And you're seeing, you know, one of the things Scott Lawrence has said, and my buddy Dave Fia said, on the head coach for the under 18s, is that there is really no pathway for coaches to move up, right? And their knowledge base isn't there. And as much as they could take the coaching level, you know, classes, you know, it's really on the field stuff. How do you put it into practice? Right.
Right.
One of the things, you know, again, coach youth football, one of the things we do is I don't have a kid on the teams. And me and the same four guys have been coaching. We follow a team for a couple years, and we always have three dads who coach. And usually the dads who coach have no idea what they're doing. Me and my four friends that coach, we also have coaching at high school level experience. So like we should, this is how you, you know, time a practice. This is how you break down this. This is how you break down that. So that way, eventually, when the teams get a little more competitive and you're out of that stage of youth football or youth sports where you're like winning doesn't matter and it's starting to matter a little bit, the fathers then can take over because they've learned how to do it, right? Right. But it's not something you know how to do unless you're taught it. So we've really fostered teaching, and not we've had moms do it too, moms and dads learn a certain way. But that's something we came up with because we saw there was a need, and I think it's hard to do that because there's not that many, you know, rugby coaches, and especially in specific areas like a small town. You know, for me, I had 4 years of rugby in college that didn't have a coach ever. The closest thing we got to a coach was any foreign kid who played rugby as a schoolboy. You know, give us some ideas here. You know, what are we doing? And when we did ask for a coach, they wanted I swear to God, we got a 13-page resume. This guy put down every point he ever scored as a rugby player.
Oh, goodness.
Wanted $5,000 a year, a visa, and a place to live. And we're like, we can give you a 30 rack of beer. And you got to figure out how to get in the country.
Yeah. You know?
So I trust me, I do think that that is a big disadvantage for a lot of teams is competent coaches with an advanced rugby knowledge beyond what the basics are. And again, that's not a knock on individual teams. It's just
not at all
what we have right now, you know, and that's part of growing the sport. So my last question, and I wonder if you're going to answer this one or if you want to kick it back, we'll see. It's a good question, I think. But if you can make one change to the club rugby game today, whether it's on the field or maybe there's something administratively that's a bugaboo for you that you've noticed in the last 4 years, like what's one change that you would like to make nationally in the whole club scene?
Oh, this might get me in trouble. I think, you know, there's been this, and again, this is my opinion, and they say bad press is probably is press, you know, so you might gain some followers from this. I don't know. But I think for now, where the United States rugby landscape is, I would personally like to see that nationals be for D1. Mm-hmm. A lot of these clubs that I'm coming across, I had a club in my union that didn't have a bank account till last year. You know, no coaches, they're paying club players dues because, you know, the players can't afford them. Mm-hmm. They're good players, they show up to practice, but they just can't, you know, they can't afford it. So asking D3 clubs to go to Austin or wherever it is, to go compete when it costs 10, 15 grand. And I know that because I've seen the receipts.
Yep.
But then also asking them on the other hand to be more financially responsible and grow as a club. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And again, you know, this is my opinion, but the way we've approached this is by having a set place for our regionals every year. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows in our four unions, we're going to Vegas this year. And so
you could set the expectation, you know, we know it's the flight from Tempe is going to be to Vegas is this, it should be this every year. We know we got to take whatever 17 guys plus a couple trainers and a coach. So it should be this. We know we can get a rate at this hotel because we stayed there the year before, yada, yada, yada. You know,
exactly.
So you're setting the expectation. You know?
Yeah, we're giving them a standard, and it's going to be the same every year or better. It's not going to go backwards. And this is all to help grow the club landscape, right? Because we're trying to put money back in their pockets. We're trying to, you know, historically they've had 2 weeks to make these travel arrangements. Yeah. You know,
crazy.
Yeah, it's we're doing our best. So I'm not trying to slam anybody here, you know, but I do think that. maybe chip a little more money to the regionals way, and have D2, D3 end there, and nationals D1 live streamed event nationally, and let these clubs save on their money and get ready for the next season, you know?
And let's be honest, if you just did regional tournaments and again, set the expectation, you know, each regional, you know, the unions are going to get to, you know, each regional's unions are going to get together and figure out their thing. And then, you know what you do, you live stream it on YouTube for free. And then you have the donation button there and people who watch and your mom watches, have her donate $15. That's going to go to the union that can then go back to a youth program or, you know, initiatives to say, oh, we had $500. We can give $100 to each team that's going to come to the regionals to take off their hotel bill. Like, however you decide you want to use it, right? Yeah. But in the age of technology, where like we're on this show and it doesn't cost us that much to produce this show and run the show and do everything that's needed, you know, you get a decent, you know, iPhone at this point and you have a little bit of production to it. And, you know, I've done live events on MLR fields with just my phone that have had pretty decent production. Again, do as much as you can for free to get your name out there and then have all your, you know, you have how many regional teams coming in for a playoff, have the team share it on social media, have the individual players on social media. All of a sudden you have 500 shares of the social media thing that you're live at a regional event.
Right.
And that can bring in, again, more awareness and more stuff. And that's how, what we're doing in this era. I think you're right. We're almost doing like that AAU basketball type of program for a senior club rugby team, you know, lower level scene, that doesn't make sense. You know, I got a job, you know, I work 50 to 60 hours. I have kids. I can't, exactly. You know, as much as I want to think about spending $2,000 to go to nationals, I gotta be honest. It's not something that's on my list. You know, maybe you want to do it once, but to do it every year to me does seem a little bit crazy at those lower levels.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. I've seen the receipts that come. I had two teams go last year. Yeah. I've seen the receipts that come from these things, and it's not cheap. You know, now that being said, the Senior Club Council, they just hired a social media company. And so these regionals coming up are going to be, you know, live streamed and covered a lot better. You know, so maybe that is something that we talk about, is having D2, D3 end there, make it a larger, more talked about tournament, and then D1 goes on, you know. And again, I know from having that conversation at the national level that it's an unpopular one. So there's people
that
on
doesn't
both
mean
sides
it's not the
it.
Right opinion.
That is
a lot
true.
Of unpopular that opinions that, you know, can help you grow in ways that you're not thinking about. You know, I'm by trade, I'm an accountant. So when you talk about the money, I'm like, ooh, yeah, that does make sense. You have a club that's trying to be financially viable. And again, you want people to play, and you're going to help people in certain situations to play, whether if you have other people paying their dues, or you have organizations coming in and chipping in to pay dues, or you're just kind of letting them slide on the dues for a little bit because you want them to participate, to have a field, a full team.
Yeah.
Is it financially responsible if you get a slot to go to fucking Wisconsin or Maine or whatever they want to do nationals? You know,
I just,
to be viable for next year.
Yeah, I just wonder if that 20 grand, how that might help the club if they put that into finding a coach or starting a youth program.
Fixing the pitch, you know, you have crazy weather and the pitch is screwed up. And now all of a sudden the next 2 years you're playing on a pitch that I wouldn't say is unsafe, but is not probably the most suitable pitch. And I'm sure that happens a lot, whether it's in the Southwest in the dry or you're up here in the Northeast and you have, you know, 18 inches of snow till friggin' April. You know, I mean, I'm sure that you could find a way to do something with that. So.
Agreed.
Wes, I really appreciate you coming on. I love, you know, speaking candidly with you and hearing your opinions. And again, it's good to speak to somebody at a level of club rugby that can see issues almost from a 10,000 foot level, as well as obviously, you know, being in your own club and youth and seeing those little problems, you know, but you know what the landscape is in your area is really nice to see. So I really appreciate you coming on. And before you go, you want to give a shout out to your club or to specific people or whoever? Now's your chance.
I mean, just like to first of all say thank you for having me. It's been a blast. I'd like to thank all the people that work with me on the Senior Club Council, making Senior Club Rugby possible. My team, Prescott Black Sheep. Kind of a tough year for us, but we'll be back next year. So
awesome. Really appreciate it. Again, thanks for coming on. And Rugby Rant fans, as always, we're hitting you with some RPKs and interesting interviews, and we hope you like this one. really, again, thanks, Wes, for coming out and giving us some talking about tens, talking about the landscape of rugby on the club side, and really appreciate it. And Rugby Rant fans, I'm Scott, the big guy Ferrara, and we'll see you at the next one.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.